Well, hello everybody out there in Radio Land. It's almost 9:30. This is John Orr. It's time for a conversation with John Orr. So this is a community conversation. All you have to do is call if you want to put in your 2 cents, make your comments, maybe raise some questions. The topic today is the Port of Astoria. How does the future look? So I attended a meeting this week of a work session of the Port of Astoria, and the topic was the eviction, or at least temporary removal, of the tenants and the fishermen of the East Mooring Basin, which raised hue and cry from the fishermen, obviously. So in light of that, I've invited, and Mr. Dave Densmore is here. He has graciously accepted to bring what I hope is the commercial fisherman's perspective to all of this. And let's do a little mic check. How are you doing? Speak into that mic.
Yeah, good morning, John.
Yeah, maybe just raise it up a little bit to your lips there. And so, Dave, just tell us a little bit about your background. Let me also be sure to let you know here on KMUN that the number to call in, and you can call in anytime. You don't have to identify yourself. Speak freely, but respectfully. It's 503-325-0010. That's 325-0010. So, Mr. Densmore, tell us what you do for a living, a little bit of background.
I'm a commercial fisherman. I've been a commercial fisherman all my life. I grew up pretty much in Alaska, but we moved down here so I could finish going to school. I graduated from Clatsop College in Napa High School, and I gilled on the river, up in Youngs River, and so on. I trolled out of here. I fished albacore out of here. I had a little dragger out of here for a number of years, and so my roots are pretty deep. My kids are born here in Astoria. I love Astoria. I love this port, and it breaks my heart to see it just sliding into disrepair like it is. In fact, it's almost dead. And so it's not just frustrating to me as a commercial fisherman that who needs moorage. It's also as a citizen of Clatsop County in Astoria that loves this place.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about the past. I heard at the meeting that from somebody, I don't know if it was you, but that in the 1980s or 1960s, there at the East End Mooring Basin, there were 180 rented out slips for vessels. Is that
right?
It
was a thriving marina or basin. It was actually a boat basin. We didn't use the word marina in those days. The salvage chief was there. She was laying in one corner on the lower river side of the causeway, and there was a drag fleet there. There was gillnet boats there. There was George and Barker was actually inside the area, and they had docks and gillnet boats and boat building facilities and the whole works. They built gillnet boats in there and so on. So.
And so now, as compared with then being 180 or so boat slips active there in what we now call the marina, and about how many now do you know?
Oh, I think there's probably less than a dozen. And a lot of that is the guys have gone, slipped away just because, to begin with, they started restricting us parking along the sides there. There was a guy who got in trouble for just stopping, parking alongside to unload groceries so he could put them on his boat. And then they restricted the driving out there, period, and now we can't even walk out there. So it's just been degenerating, and you have to have access. You have to have access to your boats. You got four guys on a boat, you're making a 4 or 5 day trip. That takes a lot of groceries. It takes a lot of maintenance.
And not only that, but as was in the news, the port has closed access to the East End Mooring Basin based on safety concerns raised by an Oregon Department of Transportation report. And that report apparently has not quite come out yet, at least to the public, with its recommendations. And that's very unfortunate. And that's part of what you say is the neglect and the infrastructure decline out there, right?
Yes, yes. I think Floyd Holcomb mentioned that he has a 600-foot causeway going out to Pier 39, and he has a crew working on it all the time. We haven't had any maintenance out there in a long time. They used to be, I think Bergeson had a running, kind of a running contract to do a certain amount of maintenance every year, and that hasn't happened for a long time.
Well, let's pull back a little bit from, you know, the narrower view, which is, of course, the troubling development, which is beseeching the fishermen that are moored there at the East End Mooring Basin, to the larger picture of finances. Now, I did a little research, as I'm wont to do, and it said in the Daily Historian on November 27th this year, the port is losing $1.1 million per year. And in 2018, I think it was, they took a $935,000 hit for future retiree health care costs. And, you know, to run a port with as many acres and operations and, you know, storm-weathered facilities, it takes a lot of money. And, you know, can they raise taxes with the voter-approved taxes? I mean, maybe they would, but it takes a lot more money, and this has been true from my research for a while. They've been spending more money than they've been taking in. Another statistic, they're making $500,000 more per year on their operations, but they're spending $300,000 less for the maintenance of their operations. So it sounded like from this audit report that which was featured in the Daily Historian that the audit paints a picture, and I quote, of the staff's work to make the agency, that is the port, more efficient. But I heard the term $100 million thrown out at the meeting as the amount of money to really shore up all of the port's operations, all its facilities, bring its infrastructure up to snuff. The article I read in the Historian said $20 million was needed to bring the docks up to proper working condition, and $7 million in particular for Pier 2. That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But here's the deal. I have old boats. I keep them fishing. I keep them going. I keep them safe. But we don't do it with one big, huge shot. It's a little here, a little there, a little here, a little there until things are back in shape. So, and as far as I'm concerned, they basically run off a lot of their income base. The fleet's left because of the lack of maintenance. It's kind of a catch-22. I understand that, but if you they just pushed Bergeson out to a Tongue Point. Now he's out where that money's going into private hands. It's not no longer coming into the port at all, and it's the same thing as happening with the fishing fleet, which is where my focus is because that's what I know about. I don't know too much about the rest of it, but I do know that up and down the coast, other ports are thriving and this one is dying, and that's what breaks my heart.
I appreciate that sentiment. I do want to invite the callers out there that are listening that have concerns or ideas for the Port of Astoria and the East End Mooring Basin, hopefully temporary closure that's in the news. The number here is 503-325-0010. Please give us a call. This is The Conversation with John Orr, 503-325-0010. You know, the numbers are staggering, and I'm wondering if the strategy taken by the port is that you put the money where the limited money for infrastructure maintenance and repair, where it'll do the most good, and maybe they are just starting to, maybe like they did with Tongue Point and other places, are just writing them off, and then maybe the time will come where the East End Mooring, basin is written off, which is to say sold and put in private hands that would have the capital to manage it properly. What do you think about that idea?
Well, it seems to me like if we keep privatizing everything along the waterfront, pretty soon you don't have any port. You don't have a port. You have private industry, but you don't have a port. Then Astoria has always been a port city, and it It's
well, couldn't you have a port that is, I mean, as a condition of sale, for example, of some port properties that they continue to operate, at least for some time period, as a viable port to support the commercial, you know, the commercial fleet and commercial activities. I mean, I know that that makes it a little bit problematic if you want title free and clear, but what about that idea that if the port doesn't have the money to maintain it, then put it in private hands, and then they have investment, they see an opportunity for a return on their invested capital, they manage, they maintain, like, you know, any good business would, and that way, rather than shutting them down, as has happened with the East End mooring basins, it's open, it's repaired, and it's a safer place to be. What if that were possible? Would you endorse that?
Well, it looks good on paper. Mm-hmm. Anything that would revitalize this port, I know of quite a few fishing boats that would like to come back. And again, I'm trying to keep my focus a lot broader than just my interest as a commercial fisherman. But that's where I have to speak from, because that's the only thing I know about for sure. And I don't believe that if it goes into private hands, there would be room for us.
You think that the private sector would open it up to commercial, to luxury vessels or private boaters that aren't really the people from Portland, for example, or people from other places, which would just rent out to have, you know, their 20 or 30 or 40 foot pleasure vessels, because there'd be a greater return for them in that than from fishermen?
So. I believe that. You look at the West End Basin, that was built for the troll fleet. It used to be full of trollers. Granted, the fisheries have had a lot of problems the last few years. They took a real sag, but at the same time, other ports are still full, have a lot of trollers in them. This one's all sailboats and all yachts, and some of them are getting pretty mossy from lack of use. So
there's some evidence for that fear that it would it might be used as a place for boats to dock and to get resupplied, but they might not be they might not be for commercial fishers.
That's right. There's other ports up river that are now pretty much for sport use and for pleasure use. They really frown on commercial boats stopping there. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I do wish we could all coexist. You know, years ago, I remember when years back, that when the log ships were loading logs, were the tugs were towing the rafts in, and they were unloading half the longshoremen gilling at it at night, and everybody worked together. Everybody coexisted. Some of the fishermen worked the logs, and some of the longshoremen fished, and it was a great interaction. It was a good community. The safety boats were always gillnet boats. Yeah. And now, for some reason, we're standing opposed to each other, and we're all losing, I think.
I would like to remind our callers this is a conversation, and not just between Mr. Densmore, a commercial fisherman, and I gather poet as well. So please call 503-325-0010. If you have any thoughts about the direction the port ought to go. I mean, one thing we were just talking about is, you know, turning over some of the neglected infrastructure-wise properties of the port into private hands. How do you feel about that? And do you agree with Mr. Densmore that would augur badly for the future of the commercial fishing fleet in Astoria, which appears to be diminishing over time? So if you are familiar with the situation, or you have questions about it, or really what is needed, it seems like, to go forward are good ideas. There's hard decisions that need to be made. Another statistic that I gathered was that the annual upkeep of the infrastructure of the port calls for $2.5 million, and there is only $1 million available per year, which translates to $1.5 million every year of neglected infrastructure. And anybody that owns a house or owns a rental or has a boat knows that the longer you put it off, the more expensive it is. And at some point, particularly in the rough weather and conditions we have here, it's a loss. It's just, it turns from a valuable asset to a big old goose egg and a nuisance and an eyesore and a danger. So that's what it appears like the port of the port of Astoria is up against. And, you know, many of us who've been here a while know that in the past there have been some problems. There was the dredging issue, which I guess ended up costing the port about $800,000, much of it in legal fees. And then there was the situation which seems to be resolving itself now. And that would be with the hotel, what was the Red Lion. And, you know, there's apparently been some missteps taken. And I will say that as somebody who hasn't attended many port meetings, I attended some of them complaining about the backdoor LNG approval deal back in 2004, 2005. But there's still a lot of acrimony and a lot of finger-pointing when what I heard our Port of Astoria executive director, Mr. Knight, point out, he said there's just not enough money. And I just got an uncomfortable feeling it was like a circular firing squad. And that is sad. So it does seem to come down to money. And perhaps there was neglect over the years, but that's what's done is done. And a lot of those commissioners, most of those commissioners that presided over that apparent neglect are gone. So we are left to manage in the wake. So my concern is that if we're falling that far behind in the neglect, such that, for example, the East End Mooring Basin is getting shut down, we really need to take a look at some hard options and some difficult options. And the, you know, the one that I've heard some folks talk about was, well, just, you know, put it in private hands. And but I guess the argument there is, what concern is there for the culture and the economic viability of this important and historical resource, the commercial fishing fleet? I mean, you need fish to eat, and it's part of the local economy. So how could we do that? Is it possible to bridge that? So give us a call if you have any knowledge about whether maybe this has worked elsewhere on the coast, where infrastructure demands are great and resources to fix them are in short supply. This is all over the country, of course. It's an issue that seems to get occasional attention, but it doesn't get any kind of remedy from our governments, federal or state. So 503-325-0010. The topic today is the Port of Astoria. What's in it for the future? And your ideas, your calls are welcome. So let's go back to Mr. Densmore. Now, is my understanding that Tongue Point was held by the federal government, then it was held by the state government, and then it was turned over to the county, and then the county sold it to the port. Does that sound more or less right?
You know, I don't really know how that worked, but I believe that it went to private hands, and then the port leased it from and with plans to do something there, but it was just too big of a project for them to handle.
And now, what is the status of the ownership of the port? I mean, of Tongue Point, rather.
I think Tongue Point now is in private hands.
Yeah, it's in private hands. And is that where the Bergeson outfit went?
That's what I understand. And apparently there is jobs coming in up there. So
So it looks like, at least as far as that is concerned, although not necessarily dealing with the commercial fishing aspect of it, it has been that transaction has been of a benefit to the community. Jobs coming in, one less thing, I suppose, in terms of infrastructure expense for the port to worry about. Now, why wouldn't that work? That model work for the East End Mooring Basin?
Maybe it would, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I really don't know.
It seems to me if as a community we want to preserve the fleet, then we would need to make that a part of any deal if we sold it. And then we have a caller. Hooray. So let's hit the line. This is The Conversation with John Orr. What's your comment or question?
Well, actually, I have a couple of them. First of all, I would like the audience to consider the importance of commercial fishing here in Astoria. And we get a lot of discussion going at various city meetings about development along the waterfront.
Yeah.
And there's kind of an aversion to large hotels taking over and more tourism-related economics. And so I would say to those people that feel that way, maybe they should show up at a port meeting once in a while and try to get a handle on what's going on there and to show support for the commercial fishers. And that includes myself. I haven't been to a port meeting, so I don't know what goes on there. And I'm curious if your guest could talk a little bit about port meetings and what kind of attendance do they get from the public and comments, and how are those received by the commissioners?
Okay, and we'll come back to that. What's your second point?
Well, I have concerns about what I've seen down there at the East Mooring Basin, and I know that there are some people that kind of blame the wildlife for doing a lot of damage, and I'm a big supporter of the wildlife, and I actually think that I walk there a lot with my dog around that area, and when I see tourists come there and some of them talk to me and ask me stuff, they're all real curious about the sea lions. They love them. They love to visit them, and it draws people in. And I think Astoria has taken a real negative view to some of the wildlife here that could be a real attraction, and that they could turn into a positive rather than a negative. Now, I know they can't lounge around on the docks. There's got to be some way of handling that, and they need a decent haul-out area different than where the boats are trying to be tied up. So I guess those are enough comments, and you can run with those.
Do you want to stand by?
Sure, I can stand by.
Okay, great. Well, okay. Let me share something that I heard at a conversation I had last night at a Rotary meeting in Seaside. People that have been here a lot longer than I have and more familiar with it say that as far as the sea lions are concerned, aside from what it looks like, it's hard to walk on the on the gangway, the gangplanks, the walkways there, because they're occupying them, there are little to no efforts to keep them off, because after all, those walkways were built for people to get to their vessels, not for the sea lions to lounge. But the new part was that the massive accumulation of sea lion excrement is creating a toxic environment that's sitting at the bottom of the waters near there. And that was the first I'd heard of that. But if that is true, and certainly would solicit calls from anybody with knowledge about that, that creates yet another infrastructure expense. And, of course, it's been in the news about the sea lions that they've been they're starting to get shot at more. That they are competing with salmon. I know the BPA is spending millions, maybe hundreds of millions, to reconstitute and save coho salmon and other varieties of salmon, only to see them apparently chewed up. Now, I know this is a controversial issue, and there are two points of view. What do you think, Dave?
Well, as far as the sea lions go, there's no sea lions on the float where we live, on Q float. And it just takes interaction. On P float, where they are, where they've ganged up now, before we moved off of there, they were off the main float. They stayed out on the rocks. That's their natural habitat. They've been on rocks for thousands of years. They have the breakwaters to go on. On each side of the mooring basin, eastern mooring basin, there's breakwaters, rock piles. And they do go out there. And it doesn't take a lot of effort. It doesn't take a lot of I like to see lions, Frank. I'm one of the few commercial fishermen who probably does, but they're kind of like big sea dogs. They come over and watch me when I'm working on my boat. I get a kick out of them, but they don't belong on the floats. And we keep them pushed off the floats. They learn. They're just like anybody else, anything else. They learn, and we've pushed them off our floats with our presence, just not letting them on. And now they no longer come on Q float. And that whole... When you lose the boats, then there's no interaction. So there's no reason for them not to crawl on the float. They're easier to crawl on than the rocks, and that's what's happening. It's a catch-22.
I want to ask the caller, are you familiar with some of the statistics that have been cited for the consumption of salmon by the sea lions?
I sure am, and I got to say it's a lot smaller than the amount that humans consume. The fact is... I agree with the point that the salmon shouldn't be on the walkways and docks out there. That
you mean the sea lions?
I said in the beginning, and what I'm saying is the haulouts, the rock ones, could be improved where they actually like those better on the breakwater. If they put some big slab rocks that they can crawl up on and that kind of thing, you could get them an attractive place to stay away. Now, as far as what they're doing to the salmon, they're actually improving the genetics of the salmon by eating the weak. They go after the weak and the sickly ones first. They don't go for the strongest salmon. They're the hardest to catch. So they naturally keep the strains of salmon stronger, whereas our hatcheries produce weak fish, and they're inbreeding with the wild ones, and that's reducing the strength of the species. So everything humans are doing is screwing up the survivability of salmon, and it isn't the natural predators such as sea lions and other sea forms of life or estuarine mammals that are out there eating them.
Yeah,
they're actually strengthening the salmon, well, and they give them a better chance of surviving into the future.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that particular point before in terms of is it the sea lions, or should we be more vigilant and active against them? But what I'd heard is that there were four dams upriver that were impinging and interfering with the kind of salmon numbers we would otherwise have. And, you know, as a candidate for House District 32, that particular issue was a hot button, and people of a more environmental bent or pro-salmon bent really wanted those dams to come down. And then there were, you know, other people who disagreed. So certainly that generates a lot of heat. But caller, while I have you here, did you have any idea? It sounds like you haven't been to any port meetings, but you've probably read the newspaper over the years. What do you think about the port selling off properties to deal with the apparent reality they can't keep them up?
Well, you know, I don't think it'd really be fair for me to try to figure out their finances. I think it's pretty complicated. It's a pretty big organization. They have a lot of properties. But one thing I will say that I've read in the paper, and that's where most of my information about the port has come, actually, is that it seems like they spend a lot of time fighting lawsuits over this or that. And they just had a big one with a piece of property at the other end of Astoria with a couple of hoteliers. And it seems to me that all could have been avoided, but it wasn't. And it wound up costing them money to do what they did in terms of hiring attorneys. Yeah. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense to do that. And they fought environmental regulations that were brought on to them for contaminating the water and runoff from their facilities, I think, at the West End. And, you know, instead of just working with the regulatory agencies and trying to find a better way of doing it, they spend a lot of money trying to resist. And I think they do better trying to be more cooperative. And I am for keeping a public port authority, you know, one owned by the county, essentially the citizens of this county, that's their property, and the port directors are supposed to just work for us to keep that port viable, and I'm all for doing that and finding a way to keep a good commercial fishing fleet here.
Would you agree? We got to wrap this up pretty quick, but caller, one last question. Would you agree to pay higher property taxes to sustain the the rather large financial burdens of infrastructure maintenance?
Sure, I would. I voted for a couple of property tax increases just a month ago.
Good to know.
I'd vote for more to keep this strong because, like I say, it's either that or you're going to have big hotels all along there replacing it. Well, there'll be some kind of economic activity there. And
okay.
I'd rather it be some commercial fishing there. That's important to the region.
We really appreciate your input. We got to leave it there. It's coming up on 10 o'clock. It's 9:59. This has been a conversation with John Orr. I'd like to thank our callers. Thank Mr. Dave Densmore, commercial fisherman, with his commentary, his opinions. Really appreciate it, Dave.
You're welcome.
So we'll be back next week, 9:30, for a conversation with John Orr here on KMUN 91.9 Astoria, KTCB, Tillamook 89.5, streaming live at coastradio.org. So coming up will be the news at 10:01, and then we'll have Friday Folk, which is a great show. And so thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with a new topic.